Welcome to Christ Today, and let us pray. Heavenly Father, let us each feel the joy from our being a part of your plan and your purpose, and we pray in Jesus' name, and amen. I'm going to talk for a little bit about basic first aid before we move into other topics today. And I want to remind you to have those most basic items for simple and common first aid problems or needs. And to me, those are pretty basic things. It's cloth medical tape, triple antibiotic ointment, gauze pads, and a little Swiss Army knife with scissors. So those are the most basic things. That is what you will want for your personal first aid kit. And in addition to the cloth medical tape, probably 1 inch, triple antibiotic, gauze pads, and the Swiss Army knife. Some other things that you will probably want to have is some kind of an aspirin, Tylenol or Advil. You'll want an antihistamine and Band-Aids because they're just simple and easy. So consider if you have any prescription medicine to have that with you too. Have a little water and maybe water purification tablets. And burn ointment can be a really good thing too. In addition to those things, you can have a small flashlight with a spare battery, and a small space blanket can be pretty handy too. A compass and a whistle are also good to have. You might also want a high calorie energy bar or a couple of them, maybe matches, and maybe a fixed blade knife. Those are kind of optional things, but some people like them a lot. So with those, you will get about 90% of your ordinary first aid needs covered. And of course, if you are interested in more advanced first aid, well, that's a lot more involved. And you can only do what you know how to do. So those are the basic items. Some people will want to know how to deal with heart attacks or choking or delivering a baby. You know, everybody has their own needs and desires to have understanding. So for any need that you run into, though, please do always remember to pray. God does miracles today. If you talk to people and you listen, you will hear about the miracles that are going on today all around you. It's just amazing, but if you don't talk and you don't listen, you don't hear about them. So back to the medical discussion. If you're dealing with any sort of a situation, any sort of a difficulty, remember to give comfort and to show hope. Those are two essential items along with first aid. Give comfort and show hope. So if you are looking for further information on either medical or any kind of emergency preparedness, you can find many different sources. They're all over the place. Lots of corporations have free information, and many, many government agencies have free information on preparedness. And if you want, you can buy a book on it. You can go to the bookstore. There are plenty of books on preparedness. Just figure out what kind of an area you want to pursue and pursue it. Now, if you wait until some event happens, there's a lot of things that are going to be unavailable. So preparing means to think in advance and get the few things you need, get the few things you want. Get them as soon as you can. Start with a plan and do something. You will want to have some things on hand, and if you don't, well, the little things can change your lives. So be prepared to deal with whatever the situation is. And that's each one of us has a different idea. But if you don't think about it, you won't have a chance to move into an area of preparedness and preparation. Okay, so what have I been thinking about lately? Earthquakes. Earthquakes is what's been on my mind, and I want to say you don't have to be afraid of earthquakes. You just have to be prepared for one. Now, there's a few times when people really do get injured and sometimes killed by earthquakes. They kill quite a few people, actually. But in our area, we have so many building codes that are protecting us from buildings falling down and such as that, that we don't have the same concerns as many of the areas of the world do, where they build without a specific building code. And earthquakes happen all over. And one of my early experiences, again, when I was young here, I remember going to Fairbanks, Alaska. It was about a month after the 9.2 earthquake that happened in 1964. And I especially remember that there was a new department store that the earthquake wrecked. I remember that, and I remember it was something like a 4-foot rise or fall in the ground level, right on the very fault line. It was a sudden drop, like a cliff. I didn't see any earth opening. It was just a straight up and down movement right along that fault line. There was two levels of earth. It was really something that made an impression on me. So that earth movement is awesome to see. I'm glad I wasn't there to see it in person, but I did see it, and it was it was shocking. So, and then right near that fault line that I saw, went up to, at Fairbanks, Alaska, there was that new department store. It was really pretty new. And from the outside, you really didn't see damage. Oh, you did, but it wasn't just like, wow, really tore that store apart. But on the inside, there was lots of damage. And it made it so the store had to be torn down. At that time, it was a nice new department store. And it got wrecked by the earthquake. So all these things have made an impression on my thinking about it. And especially as you look at the great number of earthquakes, they are increasing in the world. Large ones and small ones, earthquakes are happening with more frequency. And here, living in California, right on the edge of that so-called Ring of Fire, you know, we're going to see earthquakes. We could very well see volcanoes and such as that. That Ring of Fire is an oblong ring around the Pacific Ocean. And this is where the continental plates move together and apart. You know, it's just a little bit. I mean, if it's an inch a year, over 100 years, that's 100 inches. And at some point, those pressures, a little bit every year, it has to make a movement, and that movement is what we call an earthquake. So Matthew 24 tells us that one of the signs of Jesus' return will be earthquakes in diverse places. So we have been having a greater number of earthquakes in the normal places, and a greater number of earthquakes in places that we don't expect them. This has been going over the last few years, and well, the intensity of the earthquakes and the frequency of the earthquakes has been increasing, both locally and internationally. So I think it's a sign. So in 1964, there was that Alaska 9.2 earthquake. It was a big one. It was really big. But more recently, there was the 2004 Indonesian earthquake. It was also a 9.2, and it caused a tsunami. Many of us can remember that because of the number of people died. 230,000 people died. 230,000 from the earthquake and the tsunami that followed. That was a tragedy. And then there was the 2010 earthquake in Chile. That was an 8.8. And we can also pretty much remember that 2011 earthquake in Japan and tsunami. It was called the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami. It was estimated that 5,000 people died or were missing in that earthquake. And then in 2015 in Nepal, an earthquake was about 8.1, more or less. It depends on how that you look at what station reported it. And about 9,000 people died in that earthquake. So earthquakes are increasing. They're increasing in frequency and intensity, and that's something that certainly in California we can pay attention to. There's a lot of earthquakes we have around here in California, and they often enough don't get mentioned, they don't get felt, or sometimes they do, but it just affects a small number of people. Huh, speaking of earthquakes, do you remember that 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in San Francisco? Well, the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. It was about a 7.0, and it caused $7 billion in damages. Yeah, we have earthquakes locally, and there was the one in Southern California in 1994. It was the Northridge earthquake, and that was a 6.7. These earthquakes caused overpasses to collapse and electricity service to be disrupted, and water service too. So we do have them here, and there are problems when the earthquakes hit. And I'm going to tell you just a little bit about that Loma Prieta earthquake, because I was in the middle of that earthquake. Me personally, in 1989, I was in the San Francisco Bay Area, and that quake shook so much that I remember thinking, if this earthquake doesn't stop shaking, it's going to shake the buildings apart. And that was a 7.0 earthquake. 7.0. And we're talking about earthquakes in other parts of the world that are 8s and 9s. And the difference between one point, between a 7 and an 8, is 10 times as powerful. So there are pretty big consequences to these earthquakes increasing just a little bit on that number scale, but it means a whole lot. So like I said, I was in that 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area, and some of those buildings did shake apart. Some of the freeways shook apart too, and that was a big tragedy. The San Francisco Bay Bridge had a section of road drop away from it. And my brother-in-law was one car away from having his car drop through that roadway. Everyone stopped quickly and nobody went through, but it sure was a little experience and a wake-up call to what can happen. Of course, at that time, the electricity went out all over the Bay Area. Phone service was disrupted. Difficult for a whole lot of people. In the downtown areas of the cities, and certainly in San Francisco, the homeless people made bonfires in the streets to stay warm at night. It was quite an image to see bonfires in the middle of the streets. And The only lights that you saw, because the electricity was out, was the emergency vehicles that occasionally went by with their emergency lights flashing. They sure did light things up when they went by. Well, the first week after that earthquake, people just about everywhere were very nice, very orderly, and very helpful. So, it was in the second week that things started to change, and some of the people were unhappy, and some of the people got violent, and sometimes tempers would flare and violence would happen. So, but it took a whole week, maybe a week and a half, for incidences to happen. So, people were frustrated. The ATMs were closed because there was no electricity. And maybe that didn't matter anyway, because the stores, they didn't have any electricity either, so they couldn't run their cash registers. So the stores didn't open. Everything was closed. There were just a handful of mom-and-pop smaller stores that were open, but they were few and far between. But there was a little bit that happened for retail sales. And maybe you could buy some supplies, I don't know. But just that brief experience showed me the importance of preparedness. And our government is telling everyone that they should have a 72-hour food and water supply on hand. 72 hours, that's 3 days. But no, in my personal experience, that is not enough. Not enough food and water. What I see is that people should have at least 10 days. That's the minimum amount of food and water. And should such a thing happen, I do want to remind you that you will not have electricity either. So your refrigerated food will probably spoil, and you probably won't be able to cook normally either. And it's not known if there will be water service. There were plenty of people who had their water service disrupted. So if you don't have water, you not only can't you drink it, you can't prepare the food you normally would, and you can't shower, and you can't flush the toilet. So it's a reminder that you want to store plenty of water. In fact, I think water is the most important thing, to store water. So that's what happened in the Loma Prieta earthquake in the Bay Area. And, you know, if we ever did have another earthquake, it might not be this bad. But on the other hand, it could be several times worse. We just don't know. And so I think of other disasters that have happened. And, of course, I think of the Hurricane Katrina in 2005, how it hit the New Orleans area. And what I saw from that was the big lesson to be learned, that FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, took almost 2 months to provide meaningful assistance to the people who were suffering. 2 months is a long time to wait for help. Now, I will say that there were other people and other organizations who did help their neighbors. They were both neighborly people and churches and people from out of state and local relief agencies. Local government, they helped, but they only had so much that they could do. I did complain to someone locally about this situation, about how long it took for the victims of Hurricane Katrina to get help. Why was FEMA taking this long? And his response was that he believed FEMA was still within the parameters of their charter. In other words, they weren't doing anything wrong. They were still doing what they were supposed to do. They had more time than it took them. look, I don't know what to say about this. I don't know quite what it means, except to say you will want to have your own emergency supply items. Have them. Have what you think you would need in the event of a disaster, because sure, sometimes there's local people and local organizations helping, but also there's things that you will want. You will have things that you want. This really is up to each person to decide what is the best for your own needs. And that means you have to do something to prepare, to plan, to do something for the just-in-case situation. That's what I'm trying to do with this radio show, is to tell you about what you can do and encourage you to do it. It's pretty obvious that the only person who will really take the responsibility for taking care of you is you. Sure, we expect some help, but it doesn't mean we'll get it. And even if we do get help, it doesn't mean we will get what we want. So you have an opportunity to purchase or to acquire things that you want. And only you know those things. So I really want to stress that I hope you think and plan and do. That's my message. Think, plan, and do in the way of emergency message preparedness. So if you leave any of those steps undone, the think, the plan, the do, your results will not be as good as they could have been. So do that. Think about what situations you want to protect yourself from and how long you want to have that protection or preparation, and under what conditions. What will you want? What quality of the things do you want? It's all a matter of choice, but you get to choose. So as you examine this, consider whether you are looking at hot weather or cold weather or both. If you're thinking about electricity will be available or it won't be available, and will you have a normal water service or will your water service be interrupted? Those are all things that each one of us has to examine and decide for ourselves. What do we want to do to prepare? There's other things that you will probably be wanting. Of course, water is a big one. That is just such a big one. Do not overlook the importance of water. Okay, warm clothes is another one, because if there's no heat, especially at night, you'll want to bundle up. We always think of food, and that is important. It keeps us strong and going. And then tools and supplies. There will be things that simply will not be available in the short time after a disaster, whether it's days or weeks. So think of these things. Get them now. You might not have any way to buy them if the disaster happens. Maybe you're thinking, oh, it's okay, I have money. Or maybe you're thinking, it's okay, I have silver. I have even gold. I can buy whatever I want. Well, I don't think you'll be able to. That's the point I'm trying to stress here. There's some things that will simply be unavailable. And even if you do say, oh, I've got all this silver, I can buy what I need, just get some plywood. Okay, well, doesn't sound like a good plan to me. But even if you do say, hey, I've got some silver dollars here, I want to buy some plywood or food or batteries or whatever it is. Well, I think there's some problems that go along with this. Who are you going to buy it from? And now they know you have those silver dollars, well, you might become a target. So get these things in advance. Okay, so after, or right along with the physical part, please remember there is a very important spiritual element of care and compassion. It's just loving your neighbor. It can be listening to a person who is hurting. It could be a person you know. It could be a person you don't know. Listen to their pain. Listen to why they hurt. This is something that you can do for people in a time of disaster, in a time of difficulty. And as you go through whatever it is these steps are taking you through, you want to remember to keep your own personal relationship with God. God through Jesus Christ. Keep that well strengthened. Keep it maintained. And you can do this by constant prayer relationship with Him. Remember your own personal relationship with God. God through Jesus Christ. So in difficult times, what do? You ask for the guidance and protection that He can provide. And you can ask for His working in the lives of others. And this means pray, pray, and pray. Pray. Share His love. Share His compassion with other people. And like I said, pray, pray, pray. That way you can be a part of drawing all men onto Him. Pray. Okay. So, think about that preparedness. Think about telling people about preparedness. Think about how you can prepare. And I'm like you, I don't know what to prepare for. But everybody has their own ideas about what kind of situations, what kind of just-in-case situations they want to prepare for. Now, I have certainly talked to a lot of people about preparedness, and it's surprising. Some people hear the message very well, but there are plenty of people who have two common responses. As I talk about preparation and what to do for that just-in-case situation, one group is resigned to whatever the circumstances are, and they most commonly express this as, God will provide, or I guess I'll just die. So these are the two groups of people. This first one, there are lots of them. They say, God will provide, or I guess I'll just die. So they are resigned to the circumstances of whatever they are. I wish I had an answer for you. I don't, because we all do have choices to make. We all have a life. God gave us this life. And the way I see it is we get to make decisions along the way as to how we deal with the things that are in front of us. So, there was another response. This was not as common as the other, but there were plenty of people who would say, I'll just come to your house. Yeah, that's an idea. And you know what? There will be a lot of people who will come to my house, and that'll be fine. We will want to provide things, and we will want to show the love of Jesus Christ to our neighbors and the people around us. But you have to remember that there will be a few of these people who will mean what they're going to do is come to your house at 3 a.m, and they might have weapons drawn. Who knows? Who knows? You don't know what circumstances will cause a person to do. But I say, consider all these matters beforehand, before the situation actually arises. And I am a strong believer in having a Christian community. In some form, you will want to have some kind of a group of people. Sure, call it a Christian community. And that way, you can have people to rely on for the things that you do need. You can have goals. You can work on things together. A Christian community is great. And you will also want to remember, as a part of the community, to have compassion on your neighbors, the neighbors that haven't supplied themselves with the things they need. Christians are all about showing love. And that's the thing we want to do. And it doesn't mean that you do things without prudence. You still are careful. You still are prudent. And sometimes you have to protect what you have because you need it to live. So I think that's another part of being a Christian is protecting what you have that God has provided and you have worked for. So think about these things and do it in advance. I want to talk a little bit about money too, because, well, I think that's an important part either for emergencies or whatever life holds for you. And as I see it, there's been a pattern regarding money ever since Genesis 47:15. It states there that when money failed, that was in Egypt, but over and over in history, we have seen this pattern of money failing. That's been one of the big arguments against paper currency, any paper currency, is that it's not something of value. All it is a piece of paper that says you have value, but there is no value in that piece of paper. There's only money in what it represents. That's a concept that we don't get put in front of us very often, but it's so very true. The value of paper money is that it is on a piece of paper and it can look pretty. And the other thing is what it represents. But with so many dollars having been printed, well, the value, the more you have of something, the less is each one's value. So that's something that we can consider as we go through this little thought process and decide what it is we would like to do. So, you know, theoretically, the money that we had from 100 years ago or 200 years ago when it looked all different, that is still supposed to be acceptable at any bank. But I think that the banks really don't do that anymore. I don't think you could have money from 100 or 200 years ago accepted at the bank. Or they might take it in and look at it and say, well, we'll have to get back to you. But I don't know. But I know the banks are pretty well regulated and they are pretty concerned with doing what they're supposed to do. And they don't like to take chances, so they don't. I think there's another interesting thing going on with money these days. And that is what's called demonetization. And demonetization means that the money that you have is no longer usable. It means they take away its value. Demonetization. Now, it's a pretty unusual concept, but it did just happen about a year ago. It happened in India, and it happened in Venezuela. In India, they demonetized two notes. And they were roughly equivalent to $5 and $10 bills. So it wasn't like it was a large bill. They took away the small bills. And their argument for that was that it would take away from illegal money. And that was their argument. So that way they could tax all the money. So the president of India announced this, and he gave the people 4 hours to trade in their demonetized currency, or it was going to become worthless. So the banks had 4 hours to redeem the old money for the new money. And that was all the people of India were given. 4 hours to trade their money in, otherwise it was going to become worthless. So also in Venezuela, they did about the same thing. And if I recall correctly, they gave the people 2 days to trade it in. 2 days to trade in their money, or it was going to become worthless. Now, there have been people who have talked about that in the Australian government, too. And they have talked about doing it in the United States. They've said, we don't need these $100 bills. Let's get rid of them. And they say, if we did that, we could better keep track of the money around us and make sure that nobody is having an illegal transaction. And, of course, that means they get to tax all the money, which is fair enough, but why take the bills away? They say then there can't be the big trades in drug money either. So all I mean to say is pay some attention. It's pretty interesting. And that makes me think of another thing that's going on, and that is there have been rumors that there is a new currency that the United States is getting ready to distribute. Is that true? I don't know. Supposedly it has a new design to it, and it has a little red color to it. Now, I would not normally consider even entertaining a rumor like this, except that 20 years ago there were rumors just like this, and they said that our present currency was going to be taken out of circulation and that we were going to get a new currency. Well, it happened. It did happen. If you haven't noticed, we have the new money and the old money is quite scarce. Well, at that time, from the beginning of the rumors to it actually happening, it took 5, maybe 8 years, something like that, to bring out the new money into common use. So I say that because it can happen again. The money at that time had dates on it, and it was released in a way that was quite close to the dates. And that made me wonder, hey, has this been a pre-existing plan or what? Because the new money came out quite consistently with the years that were printed on that new money. Well, I don't know, but it sure looked like it to me. It was a plan, and we didn't know about it. There was only rumors that the new money was coming out. So, could there be a new money coming out now? Yeah, it could happen. All sorts of things could be happening, and we don't know. There are plans being made, and we don't know what exactly they mean. So, today, there are quite a few people who are wondering if there is going to be some kind of a financial crisis. There were people in the top levels of government. There are people in finance. There are people in industry. Very many people are wondering if we are going to have a financial crisis come about again. And one of the people is the retired congressman, Ron Paul. I think he explains it pretty well. He has a good emphasis that his information and ideas have been, well, they're reasonable. I have to say that. So if you want to see what another argument to why things could happen and what it means if there was a collapse, look up Ron Paul, because he has some good arguments. And if you want a more in-depth argument or discussion, look up the author, James Rickard. James Rickard is an author, but he has had ties to the government in the past decades. And he is also a good person. He has been warning for some time that there is a crisis coming, and there's some things that we can do to protect ourselves. And he recommends certain assets instead of having your money in the bank. So all these things are good. There's another author, the guy who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was a pretty popular book. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. He also talked about a crisis coming, a financial crisis. And I heard him just a couple of days ago, 2 days ago on the radio, and he was suggesting people buy silver coins because there is a crisis coming. That's what he says. Look, I don't know what the truth of it is, but I know I have concerns. I know that there's patterns that I've seen historically, and they could happen again. We could have a crisis, that's for sure. One of the things that I have mentioned before is that our country has a national debt of over $19 trillion. $19 trillion in national debt. Now you think of $1 million, you think of $1 billion, you think of $1 trillion. They all sound similar, but they're not. They're all 1,000 times greater than the other. Million, billion, trillion. And to make those numbers understandable and what they mean one to another, or to us, I have tried to look at that, and I've calculated 1 million seconds. 1 million seconds is 12 days. 1 billion seconds is 32 years. 1 trillion seconds is 32,000 years. And we have a $19 trillion national debt. Again, million, billion, trillion, 12 days, 32 years, 32,000 years. And we have over $19 trillion of national debt. Yep, I don't know what that means, but all I can say is, wow, I don't know. It doesn't sound good to me. It sounds really bad. And our nation keeps borrowing money. We keep spending it, and we keep borrowing it. It's quite difficult to unravel who we have borrowed the money from, because the money changes hands in big ways. Between different Federal Reserves and different assets that are bought. And that includes them buying stocks, and that perhaps is what keeps our stock market increasing in the numerical value. But somehow today we have this increasing national debt and inflation. What this national debt means is that the money we are spending today is being borrowed from the earnings of tomorrow. Ultimately, our children and grandchildren will have to pay back the money that we are spending today. We are indebting our children and our grandchildren by spending so very much money. I think that at some point, some soon point, we will have to begin to cut back on the programs that our society relies on. Programs like Social Security, Medicare, welfare, and even education. Maybe it'll even make military cuts. You know, I think everything will have to be cut, but what do you do when you don't have enough money? You make cuts. So I think that's going to come, and it's going to be very, very painful for our society. Throughout history, overspending has been a very common problem. And it's been really, really rare that any of the debts that are accumulated have been forgiven. No, the money is paid back in one form or another. And in today, in our present United States, somehow the money that our country is borrowing in the name of its citizens will have to be paid back. I don't know how, but I wonder about it. maybe we're going to give up a lot of land to who knows who. I don't know, but I think it's just better to look and see what kind of things might be coming. And with the money problems, it could impact all sorts of areas, areas that are ordinary needs for all of us. Areas like the food that we eat, sure, even that, because so much of our food is imported. What do we do if we don't have any money to buy imports or food? So over time, we should keep a view, a long-term view of what we're doing, and not neglect the very basics of life, which is economic, and even more than that, it's Jesus Christ. It's telling people about salvation through Jesus Christ and strengthening our own faith. That really is the message that we always want to remember in all the things that we talk about. But all these things apply to life. We do want to think about how we protect ourselves in every way. Financially, well, money is always a good thing to have on hand, and the frequency that the value of money has been decreasing means inflation has been increasing. And what do we do to protect ourselves? Well, I think one of the things to consider is, what is money? Originally, money in our U.S. Constitution, Article 8, Section 1, says that money shall be only a precious metal, like silver or gold or nickel or copper. Yeah. And if we keep the value of money tied to something real, then our money will not inflate so very, very much. And I remember stories about how little things used to cost before the Depression. Oh, my mother would tell me that a candy bar would cost, there were penny candy bars and two for a nickel. The expensive ones were a nickel for a candy bar. Yeah, so that's just, what is that? Inflation? Sure. So what does it mean? It means that we are having inflation, we have had inflation, and when there's money being printed, and there is vast amounts of money being printed, we will continue to have inflation. So, with all that said, precious metals are good, but like Steve Quayle says, if you only have a few $100 that are spare, or maybe $1,000, that's what I would say, you don't want to buy precious metals. You would want to buy food, because food is something you will always need in a crisis, and you get the food that lasts. And what lasts, to me, it is grains. Grains last. You get a grain grinder, wheat, oil, sugar, salt, and with that, you can do a whole lot. Even though it's not the best of food, it will keep you from starving. So if you want to look at money, this subject of money, I address that a little bit further in my September 7th Christ Today broadcast. So if you want, please go to it and listen. You can do that at www.christtoday.org. And that is all lowercase with no spaces. So I would say look at the programs of January 7th, January 21st, January 28th, February 11th, and March 4th. Those are days that I had talks about preparedness. And continue listening, because there are some interesting guests that I have on this program also. A lot of people who tell about what they've done and what their experience has been in life relating to God through Jesus Christ. And of course, you can listen every Saturday, 11 a.m. to noon, and that's on KKXX. Or you can, like I said, listen on the internet. That's a good thing to do too. If you go to the internet, there's it seems to me that there's two Christ days that come up. And the one you want is the one with no spaces and lowercase. You'll find the right place when it says KKXX on the top of the screen. And my name in the middle of the screen. Again, that's christtoday.org, all lowercases, no spaces. January 7th, 21, 28, February 11th, and March 4th. Those were the preparedness shows, but the other guests are also interesting, so please have a listen. I have some good people with good stories on. So to talk about food and water and money again, I think I'll go back to David Wilkerson. He was a man who was widely acknowledged to be a prophet of God. And he talked from time to time about his vision, a vision from God in which he saw a great depression move across the world. It started in Germany, it went to Japan, and then to the United States. It had a big effect on the whole world. He saw famine, and he saw long lines of people waiting in the United States to receive a little bit of food. Of course, he didn't know when this was coming. I don't either. I don't have a good idea. But if you study history, world history, you can see some of the patterns. There are strong patterns. And seeing the patterns, I can say that there is a real possibility that famine will again come to our land, especially since the distribution systems that we have of all things, food and other things, are set up the way they are with a just-in-time philosophy. And that's why we go to the grocery store and it's restocked every single day. They restock it in the middle of the night, mostly, so you don't even know that it's being restocked. You just go there and the shelves are full. But if they didn't restock those shelves, those grocery stores would be empty in a couple of days. I want to also correct an error that I made in last week's show. Last week I was talking about the D-Wave supercomputer. It's a D-Wave quantum supercomputer. And I said that China had bought 60 supercomputers, and I determined this from counting them in a picture. So that was the one thing. China is buying those supercomputers. I said that Google had bought some. That's what the representative of the company said, but there was no indication of how many they bought. And then I said the U.S. government had bought them. And there I was trying to stammer, and as I was stammering as I was trying to remember what agency it was that bought them. I said the IRS, but it wasn't, or like the IRS, but it wasn't. It was NASA. It was the NASA Ames Research Center that bought one. So that's a correction from last week's show. And since we're talking about that D-Wave quantum computer, they say that it is immensely faster than our current mainframe computers. How much faster? Well, that's a good question. It might be 50 times, it might be 100 times, it might be 1,000 times faster. And they're thinking about the higher end of those numbers, but I would sure like to see some collaborating evidence to see that those computers really are that fast. But I thought I would take a minute to explain how those computers can be so fast. The current computers, the mainframe computers, can currently read the 0 and 1 and 0 and 1 in an empty spot. So that could be three places. That's how much our current mainframe computers can read at a time. But these quantum computers can read a cube at a time. And a cube has 8 symbols. That's what makes it so much faster, is because they can read 8 at a time. However, they are describing a cube upon a cube upon a cube upon a cube. And so instead of reading 8 at a time, instead of reading 32, 64, 128 at a time, they're talking about 256 at a time or more. So that's why these quantum computers are so much faster. That's what they say. So China is, I saw the picture, 60 of these quantum computers, and if they're able to have that much computer power, just think of what the computations they could run would be. It is so much faster than what we now can compute in the United States. So, it's just a question, and it's a concern, because if they are going to be that advanced, it's a concern. I also looked again at that CERN Hadron Particle Collider, and that is located half in the border of France and half in the border of Switzerland. It's, as I recall, it was an 8-mile area. It's a circle 300 feet below the surface of the Earth. And it's, like I said, half in each country. It has costed many, many, many billions of dollars to build. It's taken a huge scientific effort. And their goal is to recreate the Big Bang. I don't know what's possible, but I know that the director of this also has said he wants to open a portal to another dimension. And that just scares me. I only can think of another dimension in terms of the demonic realm, especially when you look at their opening ceremony, which they had a few years ago. And it was creepy. The symbolism they used was, it was not good, not healthy. But it did impress a lot of people. So the point of all this is, look around. Figure out how you want to spend your dollars, because that is how you will see what is going on, how you will survive what's going on. And I don't know what the answer is, but each one of us has an ability to see things in the future. You go ahead. You look. You see, and then you make steps to protect yourself and your family and others, because that's what we do as Christians. We care about each other. So go ahead and please listen to this broadcast again on www.christtoday.org, and that's all lowercase, no spaces. Listen to these broadcasts with my many guests. They are good guests, and I also have the preparedness discussions on January 7th, 21st, 28th, and February 11th, and March 4th. So have a listen to the shows. Oh, and if you'd like to reach me, by all means, give it a try. Do so at my email address, which is prepareforgod@usa.com. All lowercase, no spaces. I do like to hear from listeners. I like to hear what it is that you're interested in hearing. After all, I want to make this show interesting to you. You also can reach me at P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. And thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to seeing you, or speaking to you, next week.